ignition sequence start. 3, 2, 1.
Range is hot. Lock and load. It's time for the Gun Rack with your hosts, Joey and Drew.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Gun Rack, Sonoran Desert Institute School of Firearms Technology's official podcast. I am Drew Poplin with you here today. Busy times here at SDI. Got a bunch of events going on. Firearms draft is coming up next week, guys. It's going to be crazy. I'm very, very excited to share that with you whenever it's finished. Want to say thanks to Joey for taking the reins on the last episode. I didn't know much about the Fowler, so it was always cool, you know, getting to learn something new. Speaking of topics, today's topic is an inside look at SDI's firearm selection process. Basically, how, you know, SDI, how does the school decide on what firearms to send out, how many, and stuff like that. So we will be getting into that shortly. Real quick, before that, got two things for you. First one is, got a couple of comments I want to acknowledge. Not him 7321 on our most recent episode. He left a couple of comments, but one really struck me. He said, the most common firearm type is the pistol in the current U.S. The AR, I would argue, is actually the modern Fowler. And to that, and then also to Jim Rouse, I reached out to Joey to see what his thoughts were. And basically, it's, you know, hey, thanks for listening to the show. Definitely appreciate you guys giving your feedback. And I don't think either of those arguments are unfair. That's pretty much what he said. So, guys, thank you so much for commenting and giving your thoughts. Really appreciate that. Before we dive into our topic, let's talk a little bit about SDI. Sonoran Desert Institute, SDI, is an online school that helps students learn the skills and techniques that they'll need to be successful in the firearms and unmanned technology industries. SDI is accredited by the Distance Education Accrediting Commission, the DEAC. Currently, we offer 3 programs in firearms technology. We have the Associate of Science in Firearms Technology, the Certificate in Firearms Technology Gunsmithing, and the Certificate in Firearms Technology Handgun Specialist Program. Now, if you want more info about any of those programs, go to our website. It's www.sdi.edu, and you can find out more. Also, if you want to find out more specifically about how we choose the firearms that we do, just stay tuned. We got an interview with Chief Academic Officer and Dean of the School of Firearms Technology, Jared McNeely, here with us today going over that. So I'm going to kick it over to the interview, and I'll see you guys here in a bit. All right. Well, as I alluded to at the top of the show, we are taking an inside look at SDI's firearm selection process, and it's definitely something I couldn't do by myself. So I'm very happy to introduce our guest today. He's been on the show a couple times at this point, so everyone should be familiar with him. It's Chief Academic Officer and the Dean of the School of Firearms Technology, Jared McNeely. Jared, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Andrew, for having me on again. This is one of those subjects that's kind of fun to talk about. So,
absolutely. I can't wait to get into it. I'm trying to remember when we last had you on. Was it for the firearms draft last year?
I think so. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. We got to run around the NRA show, which is coming up again here soon, I think. I hope we get to do another draft. It'll be a blast.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny that you mention it. We are we're actually in the process of planning it right now. We are incorporating the unofficial SDI student Discord. I was talking with Owen Chambers, who had a huge part in setting that up. And so, you know, last year we had 4 teams and that felt massive. This year we have 14, so it's going to be a big thing. I think it's actually going to get posted next week. That's kind of funny, the timing of this, but yeah, cool deal. Well, let's hop right into it. Again, we're talking about how SDI goes about selecting the firearms that they do to send to students. So first off, you know, what firearms do we currently send to our students? I know as soon as you say whatever the answer is, this episode will be horribly dated because things change so quick.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to talk into some of those factors that change things, but that's a good point, Andrew. As soon as we record this, something will change. So at this point, let's talk about the courses in CFTG, so the Certificate of Firearms Technology Gunsmithing and the Associate of Science in Firearms Technology. You know, the big courses there are the elective courses. So we've got FTE 211. Right now, we're sending two different 1911s for that course. One is a Rock Island and one is a Thesis. And so those that's what's coming out with those. And then we've got FTE 217. That is the Modern Sporting Rifle course. We've got a couple of different suppliers there. We've got DPMS and we've got Arrow Precision supplying various kits because we can also choose in that course whether it's an AR-9, an AR-15, or an AR-10. So we've got those two suppliers that are working with us. And then our final FTE course is 218, which is the shotgun armorers course, the pump shotgun armorers course. And we are using a Rock Island All Generations shotgun in there. Kind of a neat platform because it has a lot of the different characteristics of a bunch of different shotguns out in the world. So they kind of took a whole bunch of concepts and put them together in one shotgun, which is cool to see. And then if a student goes on into the Associate of Science, we've got FTT 210, which is the muzzleloader course. And right now we're getting a Traditions muzzleloader kit for that course. So that covers the gunsmithing certificate and the associate's degree. The other certificate is the certificate of handgun specialist, certificate of firearms technology handgun specialist. And there's three courses in there. The first is the revolver course. From all students, they get a Taurus 856 revolver. Solid gun, we can get them. They go anywhere. Doesn't matter what state you're in, they can go there. So it's kind of cool because it's one of the few courses where we only have the one option. And then for 212, they're getting a striker-fired handgun. Most students in most states will get the Palmetto State Armory dagger because we can get that gun in a kit, and they get to assemble it, which is a cool function we like to see. Some students will get a Glock 19 Gen 3 because they're in one of the states that has a handgun roster that the Palmetto dagger is not on. So, and then our last course in that certificate is FTH 223, the hammer fired course. Most students are going to get an SAR B6. Again, most states will allow that, but in the states that have that handgun roster, we're getting them a CZ75 of some flavor. Again, we got to meet those state regulations. So, however, the B6 is a clone of the 75, so it again lends itself to easy transference of that knowledge that we're looking to get to the students. So,
Sure. And as you know, a 75 isn't a bad consolation prize
no,
either.
not at all, not at all, not at
No.
all.
Yeah, you said a couple things about like, you know, certain students getting different firearms. I want to touch back on that here in a second. Before we go into that though, tell me what are some of the factors that go into selecting these firearms? Because you're dealing with a vast array and a bunch of different companies and manufacturers.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we look for first off is what's the work that can be done on these guns, you know, and what's the work that our graduates, because that's hopefully where we end up with all of our students is they graduate, right? What's the work that they're going to be doing out in their shops? You know, do I want to send that super high-end gun that doesn't require any work to a student? No, I want to send them something that's going to be re representative of what they're going to see in their shops. You know, I spent a number of years working with a gunsmith shop available to me, and seeing those guns come across the bench, how do we find something that's representative of that? And so that drives a lot of the selection that we see. Not only is it guns that we can get in the quantity that we need to for our students, but it's also guns that we can get that look like something they're going to see out in the industry. So we're looking at both of those items. And then the other part is, you know, does that firearm lend itself to the projects we want the students to do? You know, does me no good to send you a firearm that's got a perfect trigger in it if I want you to work on the trigger or or the hammer or whatever, right? And so I'm looking for something that leaves work for them to do, because that's how they're going to build their skills. And then the biggest piece is, can we get them? I've talked to so many manufacturers, so many vendors, that kind of thing, that it's like, well, I need 3,000 of these. And they're like, never mind, we can't do that. That maybe 2 years from now we can build up to that for you. But right now on the spot, we can't do that for you. So there is that piece that plays into it, which is why we do look at some alternates. When I mentioned the 1911 class, there's two models there, two different manufacturers. We're looking for alternates that are of the same kind of caliber of firearm so that we can do the same projects on them. But we have that availability, because a student not having something is just not good for the student, because they need to be able to do the work. So.
Wonderful, wonderful. I like that point that you said specifically about, you're talking about, I don't want people to work on, a gun that has a perfectly good trigger if they're supposed to learn. We
Right.
are school after all, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Now, when it comes to this decision-making process, is this just you, or is it a team, or?
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a team. We've got some wonderful staff members. I've got Mike Petronella as the Associate Dean for Firearms Technology. I've got Rick Kasner as the Program Chair for Firearms Technology Programs. I've got Kip Carpenter as our Master Gunsmith. I've got Frank Vigil as a Content Specialist in Gunsmithing. I mean, I've just got some wonderful staff members. We've got all of our faculty. We poll them as well. They submit information back to us. We also have our advisory council. I mean, we've got a ton of people that we're talking with and asking questions about that help to drive this decision-making process as we look for these firearms for students, and the really cool thing is, almost to a person, the thing that they're going to tell you is what is going to put something in the student's hands that they have to work on. Because that's what we're supposed to be. We're gunsmiths, we're mechanics, right? We're supposed to be fixing things. What puts a gun in front of somebody that they got to work on it, And so it's pretty cool to see the validation of the selections, because we are looking for that kind of common thread of, this needs to have stuff that we need to work on it. So it's awesome to hear different people. The other great thing about it is, especially our faculty are great about supplying feedback as they teach classes with the students. Hey, could you add this to the curriculum? Or could we do this? Or hey, this is a project that would really make sense on this. Could we do this instead? And so we're always trying to look for the best way to give the students a great learning experience, whether it be with the firearms or with the curriculum or whatever. And so we love that feedback.
Yeah, I imagine that's very important, especially considering they have such a direct link to the student body. Now, all this talk of, working as a team and have multiple opinions stuff, that's all great. But, and maybe this is just me speaking, I know it'd be difficult for me to not have any of my personal biases slip through when it comes to selecting what firearms to send out. Like, is that something that you have to battle, like, internally?
Yeah, you deal with some of that. I mean, we all have our favorites. I mean, I've got favorites in my own safe. I think the best thing about it, though, is if we're objective and we actually step back and we look at our experiences, our biases, we call those things out. That's where we really find good level ground for a good learning experience for the students. But absolutely, the biases come into play. I mean, you want to have an argument? Let's talk 45 versus 9 millimeter. I think you did that one on a podcast at one point. That all of that comes into play. And so we look at those things and we hear those things out, and we really do try to put out there something that the students can work on. That really becomes the guiding principle. But I mean, the other part of it is, it's fun to see some of the subject matter experts' minds change. That's one of the other things that we do as we work through these processes, is we put these firearms in their hands and we say, hey, do this project like the student's going to do it. Is this reasonable? Is this attainable? Is this something we can teach, we can do? They're going to be They're going to learn the skills that we want them to learn. They're going to be successful at it, so on and so forth. And so they start to get these guns in their hands and they're like, I had a bias, but I really got to say that this is not a bad platform to learn on. A lot of the subject matter experts come around to that kind of point once they get to handle it, and so it's interesting to see that change. But that it's definitely out there. You got the camps. I'm a 1911 guy. I'm a Glock guy. I'm a whatever. It's out there. And so we have to come over that.
Yeah, man, I tell you what, I wish I could sit in on one of those meetings just to see. Now I want to go back to something that you mentioned before. It was how sometimes students receive different firearms from other students. Why is that? I know there's probably, stuff with state regulations, obviously. Are there any other factors that come in play to that, or?
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's probably the biggest factor. The biggest factor is state regulation. The other big factor is just manufacturing capacity. If we've got a vendor that's not able to supply enough at the time, we're going to bring in an alternative that allows the students to still learn. But we try not to do that as much as possible. We've got some selected that we provide to, but the state regulations are really what drives most of that. And really, if you look at the from a historical context, the state regulations, for the most part, really didn't diverge until about a decade ago. For the most part, you had to follow federal law and you were good. There were a few outliers. California was earlier than that. Hawaii was earlier than that. Massachusetts. And so really the states have waded in the last decade to really start to mix up what can be done and what can't. And there's a whole bunch of different pieces that go into it, whether it's if you're talking about FTE 217, whether there's an assault weapons ban and what actually constitutes an assault weapon, right? By their definition. I'm using that term because they use it, okay? Not that I agree with it, but what's their definition of it? Because in some states, that means that a gun doesn't have a threaded barrel. In some states, that means it doesn't have a pistol grip. In some states, it means it doesn't have a detachable magazine. And so what can we get that falls within that allows the student to still learn? There are some states that make it so restrictive, we just can't offer that course, and so we look at all of those things. When you talk about the handgun side of things, I mentioned the Taurus. The Taurus is the revolver that we send out. That revolver is legal in all of the states that we have students in. And so it makes it very simple for us. California has a handgun roster. And so trying to find a firearm that's on that roster that matches keeps us in certain guns where the rest of the student populace will get something different. And so we've got to evaluate all of that. Probably the only other really easy class is FTE 218. Pump shotguns, nobody's really talked about. Now that I've said that, somebody's going to get the wild idea. But that's one of those really simple ones that no matter where you go, it's going to be legal, you think.
Yeah, we're knocking on
But
wood right now.
yeah, we're knocking on wood. But actually, I'll tell you that that's not true because some of the states have gone to a 21-year-old age limit. And so our 18-year-olds can't. 18 to 20 year olds can't buy them in those states. And so even then, when you think you've got a platform that could go anywhere, you don't. There's still some kind of a restriction on it. So
Now, when those bills or laws are passed, how long does it normally take you guys to pivot to a different firearm?
yeah, it depends on the bill or law. Just really quickly, I'll go through the process of as these states do it. Number one, the legislative sessions in states differ. If you go to Montana, I believe they're, at least the last time I checked, their legislative session was only about a month or 2 months long, and it only happened once every 2 years. And so the chance for these laws to come out of some of these states is very narrow, and they just don't get a lot of work done. You get to some of the other states, it's year round and it's every year. And so the way those processes work, it goes through their state house, probably goes through committee at some point inside of the state house, then it'll move to the state senate, then it goes on to the governor's desk. At any point in that process, it could get could fall by the wayside. It could, you know, could just fall apart. And so one of the things that I always find interesting is that oftentimes we see a lot of talk about, well, this just passed a state house. Well, okay, talk to me when it's actually been signed by the governor and we have an effective date, right? Because that's when we really have to do something. It makes it hard to talk with our students about it because there's nothing definitive yet, right? We don't even know what it looks like until it's actually signed and it's actually a law in that state. And so we actually have to wait till that point and see what it says, what we need to abide by, and then we very quickly go looking. Now, the beauty is because we have some really good vendors and partners, we start talking early. Hey, we think this is what this is going to look like. What can we do? What would be an alternative to this? Because they're servicing or working with gun dealers in that state, and so they're trying to figure it out too. And so these, especially the distributors, you know, you've got the big distributors in the firearms world, we're working with them also. And we're saying, hey, what are you seeing? How are you interpreting this? What do you think we can do? Is there something we can get there? And so hopefully, as long as the bill goes through the way we think it will, as long as there's no, you know, last minute amendments, we usually have a pretty good plan that we can put in place, but we can't put it in place until something is actually signed and we know what the effective date is. Because in oftentimes, I mean, let's just be honest, it's more restrictive than what we're currently doing. And so we want to leave as things as open for our students as possible until we absolutely have to make a restriction on it.
Yeah, I thank goodness for those relationships I've been able to build with those businesses, because I can't imagine that feeling of anxiety, being in that state of limbo, like not knowing exactly, or like, you know, not having an idea of where things were going. Now, SDI has grown a lot. I think it's a pretty big understatement there over the last couple of years. Currently, how many would you say we send out in a month or in a year?
Yeah, that's a great question, Andrew. I would venture to bet, or if I had to hazard a guess based on the number of graduates we had last year, and then knowing what Handgun Specialist has kind of done in the first, you know, few months of this year as we launched that one out, we're probably on the order of 300 or 400 firearms a month. You know, which is, I mean, that rivals some of the bigger box stores at that point, you know. So it's a lot of work, and you've got to remember that this is an industry that this is not just an inventory item. You know, I can't just send any Glock 19 to a student in wherever, or I can't just send any Palmetto dagger. It is a specific Palmetto dagger with a specific serial number that has to go to a specific dealer in their state, and all of that has to be tracked appropriately by federal law. So, you know, that's another big factor is, yeah, we're doing, you know, 300 or 400 firearms a month probably, but we're also, I mean, that's 300 or 400 individually serialized items that has to go to the right student in the right spot at the right time so that they can get through their process. So
This is more of a technical question, so just tell me if I'm wrong. Is it that the manufacturer sends us a certain number of firearms, and then our shipping department then sends it to the dealer, and then student picks it up from the dealer?
you know, if you were to ask anybody else in the industry, we really look like a distributor because the manufacturers, you know, are shipping to us, and then we're distributing them out to other dealers, you know, that our students designate. And so we hold an FFL just like the dealers do. We're working under the exact same ATF regulations that any other dealer does. And so not only is it getting the right one out to the right dealer for the right student, it's getting all of those in from the manufacturer and making sure everything is accounted for the way that is required by law. So it's quite an operation in that fulfillment center that team takes care of. And if any of the students ever reach out to shipping at sdi.edu, that is a hardworking team that they're talking with, and they just do a great job of making sure those firearms and all the other tools and materials get where they need to go. So
Yeah, any of our listeners are praying folk, now might be a good time to just say a quick prayer for our shipping team. I don't know, I always feel bad whenever I have to ask them something. I'm like, I know you guys are so busy right now, but please, if you could just do this one thing for me, I'll promise I'll leave you alone for, a couple weeks,
Yeah.
then I'll come back. But
It's a great team, you know, and the fun thing about it is, like everybody else at SDI, it's how do we take care of the student? You know, how do we do best for the student? And is anybody perfect? No. None of us are perfect, right? We're all going to make our little mistakes along the way. So how do we correct those mistakes? How do we take care of the student? How do we put them in the best position to learn what they wanted to learn, which is why they came to school?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I do want to close off with one more question, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
Is there a firearm that you guys have decided on that you've maybe felt most proud of? Like, you know what? That ended up being a great decision for us.
You know, I think the most interesting one that we don't see a lot of courses go out for, probably the most interesting one that we see is that Rock Island All Generations. You know, as a firearm connoisseur, does it make me super proud that we're using it? No, but what makes me proud about that one is that there are so many different operating principles inside of it that have come from other platforms. So when you look back historically at pump shotguns, and you look back at the stuff that a guy like the Winchester Company or Mr. Browning did a bunch of pump shotgun patents, and you look back at some of those concepts that really late 1800s, early 1900s, and have flowed up through to modern day with the Remingtons and the Mossbergs of the world and those types of things. That gun takes a lot of those different concepts and put them into one package. And so it is one of those rare occasions where the student gets to see a lot of different operating principles historically applied to a modern firearm, which is, to me, being a little bit of a nerd when it comes to the history of how we got to where we got, right? And how some of these different platforms and designs have grown over the years or changed over the years. That's where it's kind of fun. You know, it's interesting to see these different principles that, well, we tried this, it didn't really work great, so we came up with this better idea. And you're starting to see a lot of these great principles mixed up into that one platform, which is really cool to see.
That is really awesome. Thank you so much. I know you're a very busy man, but thank you for hopping onto the podcast. It's always a pleasure to have you on. And yeah, all the best, Jared.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Look forward to doing it again soon.
All right. So once again, I want to thank Jared for taking the time out of his day to sit down, talk a little bit about it, kind of illuminate us on what that process is like. And I ho hopefully that answers some of the questions if you guys had any pertaining to those topics. Yeah. Again, next week should be the firearms draft. Very excited about that. It's going to be a long episode. It's probably going to be about 2 hours long. So brace yourselves, guys. Until then, take care, everyone. Have fun, stay safe, and we will see you at the range.
Sonoran Desert Institute is an online school accredited by the DEAC. It is headquartered at 1555 West University Drive in Tempe, Arizona. For more information about how you can craft your firearms future, visit sdi.edu.